sitting in for George Norrie. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. The quintessential Loch Ness Monster sighting is typically that of a large, long-necked creature that appears as a head and neck or a series of humps protruding from the water. Over the years, this has led some to speculate that the creature could be a plesiosaur, a type of prehistoric aquatic reptile, as depicted by an oft-photographed model that can be found outside the Loch Ness Exhibition Center on the western shore of the loch. Casting aside for a moment the fact that plesiosaurs went extinct millions of years ago, is it at all plausible that the Loch Ness Monster could be such a relic from the distant past? Well, according to Paul Schofield at Canterbury Museum in New Zealand, a recent study of Elasmosaurus, which is a type of plesiosaur, has indicated that these creatures would have held their heads either at the same level or below the level of their bodies while swimming through the water. This makes it unlikely that they would have stuck their head vertically up out of the water, as often depicted in photographs and drawings of the elusive Loch Ness Monster. The labyrinth of the ear works best when the tiny bones within are able to hang unaffected by gravity, according to Dr. Schofield. And for this reason, the position of the inner ear within the skull of an animal reveals a lot about how an animal habitually holds its head. He says, we have examined the inner ear of elasmosaurs and determined that their resting position was with the head horizontal to the body or even well below the body. The traditional posture shown in many a popular article on Nessie, like a sock puppet, is not something elasmosaurs were in the habit of adopting. The idea of it lifting its head up like a sock puppet is extremely unlikely, he said. You can read more of this story on Loch Ness in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. All right, we begin open lines in mere moments right here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, here we go. Open lines, and we begin west of the Rockies. Dave is in Washington State. Dave, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Well, hey, good morning. I just wanted to throw out there for people to sort of be ready for this. As the Olympics finally start getting underway, I see a lot of disruption coming, primarily because of the really poor way that the Chinese have been handling COVID over there, similar to but even worse than what some of the states did in the United States. This like zero tolerance idea, the presumption that they can stop the COVID by trying to like wipe it out is just preposterous. I mean, all they're doing, it's kind of like the difference between flattening the curve, where they talked about the main source of what we wanted to do early on in COVID was to flatten the curve. And really all we ended up doing was elongating the curve. And China, because they're stopping so many of their people from getting and acquiring the antibodies from getting and getting over COVID, they're just creating a huge population for COVID to hit. And so during the Olympics, you're going to see widespread outbreaks over there. It's going to be pretty crazy. I'm pretty disappointed in the overall way that COVID is being handled still to this day. And I heard you earlier in the show talking about when we would be endemic versus pandemic. It's already there, my friend. We are already endemic. The only reason that people don't realize it or aren't talking about it is that the narrative continues to be cases here and cases there, cases everywhere, watch out. There are hospitals that have actually told their nurses, my wife's a nurse, that if you get COVID, test positive, but you're asymptomatic, to go ahead and come to work. I mean, they're having staffing problems. You wear your mask, you take precautions at work, and you can live with it just like you live with the flu, the cold, anything else. The COVID actual death rate is so low for healthy people. It's just amazing. Even Walensky, who's the CDC director down here, she's admitted I have a videotape I recorded of her, that over 75% of the deaths from COVID have been from people with more than four comorbidities. So that's five right. plus comorbidities. The number
okay.
of people
Dave, that's
are dying.
Yours is going to be our one COVID call for the night, and we'll leave it there. But thank you. I agree with you. I think the Olympics, for a lot of reasons, not just COVID, for a lot of reasons, is not going to go off very well. I won't be watching for a lot of reasons. Not for COVID. I quite honestly, I have a problem with communist China and their treatment of the Uyghurs. I don't think they should be holding the Olympics. Let's say hi to Hebron, first-time caller in Stockbridge, Georgia. Hebron, welcome. How are you?
How you doing, sir?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I told the lady to answer the phone. I missed the first. I just missed the whole conversation. I caught the last 15 minutes. She gave me the guy's name, and I was hoping I could just go to YouTube and listen to the conversation, I guess, in a couple of days. Is that possible?
Coast? No, what you need to do, Hebron, is sign up and become a Coast Insider.
Right.
It's just like pennies a day, and then you can you have like the whole universe of Coast to Coast at your fingertips. You can listen to thousands of shows, and you could listen to last night's show as well. That's what you need to do. Go to coasttocoastam.com and become sign up and become a Coast Insider. You won't regret it.
Okay, now that guy Douglas, he was talking about dreams, right? Was he mentioning something about the military and the United States, or was it like military going against the people? I caught like the
no, we were.
Part.
I'd asked him, Hebron, what he saw regarding Russia and Ukraine.
Right.
And he said that what he saw, he said definitely Russia is going into Ukraine. And he said he saw citizens, some citizens fighting some military personnel.
Right.
Then he saw some sort of an explosion, and he wasn't sure if that might be some sort of an accident at Chernobyl.
Right.
And then he also also sees communist China rolling into Taiwan as well.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but not the U.S. military. He didn't mention the U.S. military.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just trying to get most of it, man, because, you know, I have a lot of dreams as well. I just haven't had anything on the COVID and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
You have dreams, do you write them down? Do you keep a dream journal?
Well, what I do, you know, I read the scripture a lot. So what I do, of course, you know, in the scripture, you know, you got some of the verses where it said the Holy Spirit or the Lord spoke to one of the prophets. So what I'm going to do is pray and just listen for his voice. You know what I mean?
Right.
I had to learn how to do. And when I prayed about the COVID the second time around, it's coming around now. You know, the voice I heard when the Lord told me, he said his anger is kindled against this nation, and it was going to be, things are going to get worse. And see, that's a biblical phrase all through the Bible about his anger being kindled. And I guess kindled means, you know, I'm very upset at a certain person or a certain thing. You know what I mean?
Right. So, do you keep a dream journal so you can keep track of your dreams?
Do I write? I mean, well, it's like, see, think about a dream, man. When you wake up, you know, it's in your mind. It's stuck in your mind. So I go pray and ask about it if I don't understand it. You know what I mean? And then I have dreams that I know it's like I'm saying the Lord is not trying to show me anything, because this dream, it don't make sense. So it'd just be like, you know, sometimes you have dreams of the flesh, right? Just your flesh. Like they say,
right,
when you eat the wrong food, you'll dream about, you know, you won't dream, you don't sleep well because you ate the wrong food. It makes your stomach, you know, different things happen
right
in your stomach. So a lot of dreams, man, I mean, I just wake up and just know it's not something that, it's not the Lord telling me anything. But if it's something detailed, I wake up and pray about it. And a lot of times it'll be true, it'll come true.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? And I know, you know, everybody, this show deals with things that happen that a lot of people don't believe. They try to say conspiracy theories, but at the same time, I mean, it's a lot of things that are true that a lot of people just don't believe. You know,
well, I believe God can speak to you in dreams and leave you with messages.
Well,
absolutely, I do.
Well, he did it to the prophet Daniel. When you read the book of Daniel, he does it all the time. Daniel wake up.
That's
in
right.
Dream. And he would pray and say, Lord, what did that mean? With you know, explain his dream to me. So it happens. But, you know, just, you know, the regular, a lot of people, when I have conversations about the COVID or whatever, you know, they'll say stuff like, well, the Lord would do things like that. He's about love. No, but if you go through the scripture, he tells you when he's angry at a certain people or a certain nation, he allows things to happen. And
that's true.
It's just a plague. It's just a plague.
Hebron, appreciate your call. Thanks for calling. And you're a first-time caller, so welcome to the program. And, sign up and become a Coast Insider. Great to have you aboard. Let's see. We're going to go international. Carl's in Kitchener, Ontario, just up the 401 from where I'm sitting. Carl, welcome. Good morning.
Lord. Lord bless you. Actually, I got tested. I got COVID on Wednesday. They gave me a call, but I'll be okay. My immune system's working good. Echinacea, good. Too, which got rid of my warts in my 30s. Ginger, someone told me ginger, too, for the for your immune system. I put garlic in there, too. I got on a good Christian prayer line. Garlic and lime in there. I tried it. Got my garlic press. I was feeling better just doing that, too. Rest. You need rest. And I did have to go out today. I put on three. You got to be super warm. I had three sweaters underneath my parka. So I had to go out for a bit. I had to do something. But anyways, I wanted to say CBC Radio, I think it was 10 years ago, the Cree Indians way up on Hudson's Bay, there were Bigfoot tracks. And then they followed, and all of a sudden it stopped. And a lot of natives, most natives, I think, said Bigfoot's the spirit. Maybe it's a Wendigo. They say there's a Wendigo in the bush too, right?
Right, right. I don't think that's the same, though. I don't think the Bigfoot is the Wendigo. Do you?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the Wendigo is a shapeshifter. it's a spirit. It's a bad spirit, right? Or I don't know. So,
you know, there are a lot of Bigfoot sightings up here in northern Ontario. That's for sure. Carl, great to hear from you again. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's say hi to, we're going to go west of the Rockies. Aoral is in Woodland, California. Good morning and welcome.
For taking this call. So you were speaking about the dinosaurs. Contrary to what most people think, the many of the dinosaurs were really not predators. They were scavengers. And the scavengers are usually those that have the small feet, the small arms on their body. And they have large heads and a lot of teeth that enable them to quickly dispose of the larger dinosaurs that had died to keep viruses and diseases from spreading among the population. So that was kind of an early, they were actually like the early vultures of those days.
That would make sense. Yeah, because if you've got tiny forearms, like the T-Rex, for example, great big head, tiny forearms,
right,
or tiny arms, rather, you're not going to be able to, you know, grab onto something very easily. And so would the T-Rex then have been mainly a scavenger?
Well, yeah, because, see, that large head and those sharp teeth enable it to bury its head deep in the flesh of of an animal that had perished and quickly dispose of it to keep that was the early pandemic prevention,
which makes sense.
The all-wise, all-knowing one had designed that it work out that way, because with all of those large animals dying, if there was nothing to quickly dispose of them, diseases would become quickly rampant and wipe out the large populations of animals. So along comes these large, as you say, the Tyrannosaurus Rex, with these big heads and these sharp teeth and these small arms that would enable it to put its head very deep into the flesh and to quickly chew the flesh and digest it and dispose of it.
Got it. Now, what do you think of the story, Aoral, about the Loch Ness Monster not likely being a plesiosaur? I don't know if you heard that earlier. There's a Dr. Paul Schofield in New Zealand who said he studied a type of plesiosaur called an Elasmosaurus. And the way that they carried their heads, they didn't poke them up out of the water the way we often see depictions of Loch Ness Monster. So he's basically ruling out a plesiosaur for the Loch Ness Monster. What do you think of that?
Well, that's quite interesting. I hadn't heard that before. But I did want to add, however, we see that even early on, there were ways had been designed within the natural world that would prevent the spread of viruses. And the same thing exists today. We have scattered throughout the world natural components and functions that will prevent the spread of viruses. And some of them can be easily accessed. Some of them, they're not all localized, you know. But they have been able to, throughout the centuries, keep pandemics from reoccurring too frequently. I mean, because pandemics have been breaking out, you know, every few hundred or a thousand years. But these elements that can also be obtained in these times can quickly eradicate or prevent the proliferation of viruses. And it's just a matter of having some regard for the all-knowing who has known the end from the beginning and has so.
It's true. The Earth is just this incredible mechanism with all of these intricate, subtle checks and balances built in. How do you know so much about dinosaurs, by the way, Ayoral? Did you study this in university?
No, that was part of other studies. These are part of the supraphysical sciences that gives us those kind of insights. And it's not part of the popular realm of science. But that's how I learned. That's how I had been taught.
All right. Appreciate the call. You got one more quick point. Yeah, you have to make it quick. We're hitting into the bottom of the hour.
Well, let's open. I'll call back another time. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. I'm going to say a quick hello to Cornelius, our good friend from Louisiana. Hey, Cornelius, how are you?
Hey there, Richard. How y'all are there?
Good. I just got a minute here. Just wanted to say hello.
Look, I wanted to talk for a minute, Richard, but...
Okay, you hold on then. You hold on, Cornelius. Hold on. We'll come back and we'll chat some more. When we come back, we'll get back to Cornelius for sure. More open lines on the other side right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Sitting in for George Norrie. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. A California man driving home from dinner over the weekend wound up with a mysterious addendum to his meal when he looked up at the night sky and spotted a cluster of curious orange lights hovering overhead. According to the local media report, Rafi Saramazian's intriguing sighting occurred this past Saturday evening in the city of Fresno. While cruising down the road after leaving a restaurant, he did a double take when he noticed some strange lights moving in the sky, certain that he was not looking at fighter jets, a helicopter, or drones. Saramazian marveled that it looked like a fleet of UFOs like you see on TV, he said. Fortunately, the mystified witness managed to film the puzzling scene with his cell phone and observed that, as he got closer to his house, the lights began to vanish from the sky. One by one, they would slowly disappear, he said, like fade away. This process struck him as particularly odd, as he noted that one of them would pass the other, and then the one that is passed would disappear. It was really weird, he said. Although he had seen unusual objects in the past, Saramazian mused that his sighting over the weekend was by far the most bizarre of them all. And you can see the video and the story at coasttocoastam.com in the highlight carousel. And if you like what you hear tonight, this morning, and you want to find out more about what I do and where else I can be heard, just go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, and all of my various radio projects and my podcast, it's all right there. You can sign up for my free monthly letter while you're there, strangeplanet.ca. The podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited, drops 3 days a week. My weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, airs Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern out of Toronto. And my daily afternoon drive radio program, The Richard Serrett Show, on News Talk Saga 960 AM. And you can find everything in one place, strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca. All right, back to open lines. We're going to throw a couple of logs in the fire here, some conversation starters. If you've had an out-of-body experience, I'd love to hear from you. My father once described having one years ago, and I've never had anything like that. I'd love to hear your stories. Also, Hebron, who called in earlier, was talking about having prescient dreams, dreams that come true. If you've had a dream that later actually turned out and came into being, I would love to hear about your prescient dreams. All right, we've got Cornelius standing by on the other side from the great state of Louisiana. We'll get to his call next, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Cornelius, how are you, my friend?
I've been waiting to talk to you. You know what, Richard? I wish you would just look on this. I don't know if you ever saw the movie No Time to Die, that last James Bond movie.
I did.
Okay. We Have All the Time in the World is a perfect song for the Coast to Coast audience, listeners, and callers, because it just describes what they are. Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story and a little bit. My heart's been hurting me and stuff. And a Coast to Coast listener sent me some Christian Weil, that turmeric stuff that Christian Weil has.
Oh, yes, and yes, turmeric,
my
yeah.
My heart has been beating better and everything. So I don't know if somebody just sensed something in my voice or something. And so they sent me some of those pills. And, boy, I tell you, I feel a whole lot better. So I want to thank whoever mystery person out there in the Coast to Coast universe for sending me that. And I wanted to mention, too, like Gina, boy, I tell you, she's a great call screener, boy. That girl, she checks on everybody, makes sure they're still there on the line and stuff.
And, she's terrific.
That Hedron, you talking about dreams and stuff. My dad, you know, he was a Korean War vet. He fought against the communist Chinese and stuff. And he said if they ever mandate this stuff, then he believed it would lead to the mark of the beast. This is not the mark of the beast, but he just believed the mandates would lead to that. And I don't know if you know this, this Sunday in Washington, D.C., a bunch of federal people are marching, these federal employees. They're going to million-man march like that guy, what was his name? But they're going to have a million-man mandate march where they're fighting against the mandates on Sunday in Washington, D.C. Of course, they just had the March for Life yesterday
right.
and stuff. But, Richard, you give us all good information, you and George and stuff, and we just need to get ready. Like I tell everybody, I'm the God, Guns, and Gold man, the Bible, Bullets, and Beans man. I'm in George Norrie's and Richard Serrett's army on Coast to Coast AM.
And all right. God bless you, Cornelius.
One more thing.
All right.
We had from Miss Annie in Alabama, and there's a Mobile man that I call him, the Mobile man, been sending me letters, but nobody's heard. Annie hadn't called in 3 or 4 months, and me and Gina were talking about that, so we need to pray for Miss Annie. I hope and pray that she's all right, and I hope nothing has happened to her. But if anybody in Alabama knows Annie, we need to know an update on her. God.
That's
bless
a great
you.
Idea. That's
we
true.
You.
We haven't heard from her.
God bless
Thank you, Cornelius. All right, God bless you. He mentioned No Time to Die. I don't know how. I didn't like it. I did not like it. And I know I'm not alone in that regard. I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it did not end well. Carson is a first-time caller checking in from Minneapolis. Good morning, Carson.
How's it going, Richard?
Very well, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a little bit about aliens and kind of the our existential crisis as a human civilization and how we indoctrinate ourselves in the place in the universe.
All right. That sounds like a weighty topic.
Yeah, so I've always had kind of the, I guess, the perspective. So a little background with me. I'm younger, you know, I'm 27 years old, but just recently received my PhD in aerospace engineering. A lot of these questions when it comes to flight and space and all these things, I contemplate quite a bit, you know, when I think about, like, what could be the future of what our, you know, humankind could do. And I quite often think when it comes to the topic of aliens that, you know, it's very difficult for me to think about because I think about these things and I think that we're at a very beginning point kind of in our, you know, exploration of what can be done when it comes to space flight. And it's very interesting to me when people bring up aliens because it's almost as if I think that at this point we're at such a beginner stage that I don't even know if that, you know, advanced civilizations would even consider us to be technologically advanced. I mean, if you were to give our society 100,000 years in the scope of universal time, I mean, universe was conceptualized 3.8 billion years ago, which is just insane to even rationalize as a human being. If we were to give our society 100,000 years, I mean, we could be, you know, traveling the expanse of our galaxy. And at this point in time, that is an absolutely asinine topic to even consider, considering relativity and all the scientific topics we've, you know, we've discovered to this point.
And okay, but Carson, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this then. What do you make of the statements by Ben Rich on his deathbed regarding, and he was, of course, the director of Skunk Works, his comments about things like if you've seen it on Star Trek or Star Wars, we've been there, we've done that, or decided it wasn't worth the effort. Or he also said, we have things in hangars out in the desert that are 50 years beyond your wildest imagination. And then he said, we have the technology to take E.T. home. What do you make of that?
So, so I do work for people that I can't exactly divulge. However, I would like to say I'm at the absolute cusp of technological advance right now. I'm not going to like deny any of that stuff because I genuinely believe in it, and I think that there's very and the one thing that very frustrates me. Because I've involved myself in physics quite a bit in academia. I've done quite a bit with physics. A lot of the scientists today are very closed-minded and like everything to be quite elegant and as far as equations, conceptions go, and want everything to be beautiful as they conceptualize them into reality. And I think people are very closed-minded in the way that we view conscious reality. And honestly, egotistical, and that's a huge issue with the scientific community. That's a whole nother topic. But you know, like, you know, you take your Einsteins, you take your Niels Bohrs, all those people, they went into scientific community with a very open mind. And I believe that in today's society, it's not very, it's not the way it needs to be. Everyone has their own cliques and, but In regards to what you said, I absolutely believe that those capabilities are more than possible. I mean, even today, I mean, when you look at the, I don't know if you're familiar with what the Alcubierre drive is. That is a under general relativity or Einsteinian mechanics. That's what's been conceptualized to be able to warp space-time. And in very recent years, in the past 2-3 years, what was believed to be, you know, the energy requirements or something like that, initially when that theory was proposed, was, you know, multiple times what the energy of the sun was. And, you know, in the past 2 years, they've, you know, worked around the equations and figured stuff out to make the energy requirements much, much less than what we initially thought. And, you know, It all comes back to the theory of innovation. You know, 60 years ago, they thought the Earth was going to starve of overpopulation. But then we developed new farming technology that created much easier situations to provide food for the Earth. And I believe that to be the same with, you know, the scientific community when it comes to space flight. You know, we believe things initially to be almost impossible. But as we give it more time and as we have more unbelievable minds working towards the project, we start to refine initial theory to get to a point to where it becomes feasible or possible.
All right. So do you think that what Ben Rich was talking about when he said we have the power to take E.T. home, do you think we're already involved in deep space exploration? Perhaps we even have deep space platforms.
As much as I would like to believe that right now, if there were one thing I were to believe, you know, you have the whole Area 51, the Roswell stuff, I would totally, in my perspective, from my field of work, I would totally believe that we have, you know, like, I find it really hard to believe when you really look at the Roswell stuff and all the other UFO encounters that we haven't had some sort of contact with technology that we don't understand. At this point in time, I would very much believe that we may have technology in our possession in the federal government, or you know, in the other governments within the United Nations that could potentially have that capability. Now, do I believe we understand it? Absolutely not. I mean, you know, when you really think about our scientific perspective in the community, because perspective is really important, especially in a universal perspective, because the universe was conceived about 13.8 billion years ago, I guess, in modern scientific understanding. And we're in the latter, I think it's, you know, 33% of the universal conception. There's a lot of time in between that, you know, intelligent life could have developed. And, you know, we only developed calculus 300 years ago. And in the universal scale, that's nothing. So when it comes to the human race's understanding of how the universe works, I mean, we are children. And that is a very, very conservative estimate. I mean, we're children at best at universal understanding. Do we have technology that we possess potentially? Do we understand it? Absolutely not. I mean, you have to look at it from a military perspective, because the military is where the forefront of technology is. And I'm sure we have stuff that you and I couldn't even possibly imagine as being possible.
Well, what about the TR-3B, Carson? Is that for real? This TR-3B, this triangular shaped craft that can hover silently. It's got anti-gravitic technology associated with it. Maybe what's behind the Phoenix lights and other mass UFO sightings. Do you believe the TR-3B is real? Do we have that technology?
See, that's a difficult question to answer, because when you really think about, like, I guess, like, when you look at the capability to extend power or extend reach within the world government with a capability like that, it's hard for me to believe that the United States government, with how corrupt they are, that they wouldn't, you know, abuse that power and keep it as secretive as it is. I mean, there's a definite potential that they could 100% conceal technology like that to, you know, hyper-extensive degree, to where that, you know, it would be undeniable that we don't have stuff like that. But I would like to believe, I mean, because, you know, obviously, like, technology like that would be world-changing. You know, when you look at it from a structures perspective, you know, we have tons of places that are susceptible to earthquakes. I mean, if technology like that was readily available and, you know, buildable, I mean, every building would be built on that. There'd be no reason in earthquake-susceptible areas that you wouldn't.
Right. Well, there'd be no reason to be sending astronauts up using rocket fuel. You know, that's all just obviously would be just is window dressing or whatever you want to call it. There's, you know, we get into a discussion about the secret space program and how the space shuttle program and Mercury and Apollo were all just a diversion, because meanwhile, while we're flying astronauts up into space with rocket fuel and sometimes meeting with tragic ends, they have anti-gravitics. If that's the case, this, call it a breakaway civilization, if you will, like Richard Dolan likes to refer to them, they've got blood on their hands. They've got blood on their hands. We've got astronauts dying in these horrible explosions because of rocket fuel, and they're sitting on anti-gravitics. It would be inexcusable. Carson, got to run, hitting the top of the hour. Great talking to you. First time caller. I hope you'll call again. All right. When we come back, we'll hopefully get some out-of-body experiences and some prescient dreams on Coast to Coast AM.